spent a good number of years in corporate America in accounting. Linda is the co-owner of a brewery and a roasting company here in Marlborough, Massachusetts called Lost Shoe. A really awesome story. Got interested in accounting in high school and followed that passion through her days at UMass, and even spent a good number of years in corporate America in accounting. And on a vacation, she was with her husband, and they've always had the dream of opening a brewery and what became a roasting company as well, coffee as well. And she shares her journey, and it's pretty fascinating because the business plan started probably in 2012, and they ended up opening, they secured their lease in 2017 and opened in 2019, just a year shy of the pandemic. So we talk about navigating through that, the challenges of the business, and also kind of how she's pursued her passions and made it a reality. So it's fascinating person to talk to. If you're into coffee, we get into a little bit of that at the end as well. And love the conversation with Melinda, and I hope you will as well. Check it out.
Cheers.
All right, cheers.
Melinda, thank you for coming on Beers and Careers.
Happy to be here.
Much appreciated. Co-owner of Lush Shoe Brewing Company.
Lost Shoe Brewing and Roasting Company.
And Roasting Company, that's
right.
Don't
forget the coffee.
I've had the coffee. It's delicious.
Thank you.
It's delicious. And before we get into your story, which mm-hmm. I found interesting, accounting to beer.
Yes.
We have a couple rapid fires that we got, let the audience get to know you.
Sure.
Favorite cocktail, beer, drink?
Ooh, my favorite cocktail, it's going to be between an old fashioned and a margarita.
Perfect.
Love them both.
Thrilling. Same. I love them as well. Do you have a favorite curse word?
You know, I don't. I try not to. I'm around, you know, my employees all the time.
Yeah.
So I try to keep.
Look at that.
Keep it professional.
Impressive. Impressive. How about quotes? Any favorite quotes? Are you into quotes?
You know, I am super not a quote person.
Okay. It's a polarizing topic.
I'm not a quote person. But I will say we have some construction happening behind City Hall. So I was like, what would be a fun sign to put there while all the, you know, road is torn up in dirt? And I found a quote that said, "The fun starts where the pavement ends." And I thought that would be appropriate you know, our road is all full of dirt.
Is it a mess right now?
Not yet.
Okay.
Not
it's
yet.
About to be.
That's what I am anticipating. Mm. Yes.
Mm. What was your first job?
My first job. So my mom owned a preschool and kindergarten in Marlborough. So I guess my unofficial first job was working for her, helping mop the floors, do all the, you know, fun mm-hmm. stuff. It was a good learning experience. I learned what hard work was from a very young age. But officially my first job was at Party Works. Are you from Marlborough or do you know the,
no.
So Party Works was a party store over on Route 20. So I spent high school blowing up balloons and I loved that job.
How old were you when you first started helping your mom?
I was probably 10 years old.
Okay.
Yep.
Oh yeah. So early on.
So like, yeah. Not officially on the payroll anything.
But working.
But working
for dinner.
Exactly.
Any favorite books?
You know, I love reading a lot of business books these days.
Okay.
I used to be a big reader, then I had no time.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been trying to get a little bit more into reading, but I find that the only thing that really kind of captures, I'm able to pay attention to are more business-based books. So, I don't read a ton, but when I do, it's usually business-related.
Yeah.
Yep.
Any recent ones that
Right now, I'm currently reading a book called Essentialism, which is very helpful information because, you know, it's from kind of cutting from where you're starting to where you're ending and kind of how to cut out the fluff in between so that you can work more efficiently.
And like on that topic of cutting out the fluff in between, like getting where you're going, for you, has there been a moment throughout your career where work stopped becoming a job and started just becoming part of who you are on a daily basis?
I feel like as soon as we opened our business, I feel like our business is a part of us as well. Mm. It doesn't, there is no real I mean, there is a separation, but there, it feels like, you know, even when I'm not there, you're thinking of what's the next thing and how can we make this better? And it's hard to really kind of not think about that when you own a business.
Shut it off.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you've been open since 2017?
2019 we opened.
Okay.
So we signed our lease December of 2017.
Okay.
May 2019, we finally opened. Mm-hmm. It took us a while to kind of get everything up and running. We had to put in a whole new electrical panel for all our production equipment because there's a lot of power we needed for the brew house. So it took us a bit longer than we anticipated.
Yes.
But yeah, May 2019, we opened.
Very cool.
9 months before the pandemic. Right, great timing.
Perfect timing. So I was looking at your LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
My
I don't know if that's updated. Is it updated?
Yes, it is. Good. It is, but it's like my crappy research, crappy way of doing research before. And I noticed like you went to UMass.
Yeah.
Focused in obviously business and accounting. First job out of school in AR
mm-hmm.
for Fresenius. Like, so you were on the accounting path.
Yes.
Why?
In high school, I took Intro to Accounting. It was probably my freshman, sophomore year. And then I was like, you know, I kind of like this, you know, it's numbers that make sense. It's not like calculus. Mm-hmm. It's real life numbers. And then, the next year I took accounting 2, and then very few people made it to accounting 3 in high school. People just usually are like, no, I'm not doing this. But I loved it. I loved the numbers. So high school is kind of where I got my start.
Okay.
I took 3 years of accounting and loved it. And when I went to UMass, I was
You knew you wanted to stay.
Yeah.
That
well,
path.
I actually started at UMass as a hospitality major.
Okay.
And within the first few months, I was like, I think I need to go back to accounting.
Mm.
I really enjoyed the hospitality courses, but I feel like my brain just worked better in the numbers
mm-hmm.
aspect of it. So it's kind of funny because now I'm in the hospitality industry doing both. So.
Exactly. Yeah. That was my thought when I saw your background. Mm-hmm. I was like, all of this served her very well.
Yeah.
For current state.
And it was not strategically planned that way at all. When I was in college, I did not know I was going to open a brewery and roastery at all. So
wild. Yeah. It's actually that encapsulation of what you just said was why we were inspired to start the podcast.
Mm.
Because it was like people end up in these jobs or careers, I'd rather say, loving what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the things that happened before then generally didn't have a lot of strategy to why they were doing it, but all of that prior experience is so impactful to their lives today. So it's wild how that works.
It is. I just the trajectory that happened, I just could never have. And who knows what's going to happen in 10 years, right?
Exactly. And that's it's kind of the fun of it.
It is.
It's absolutely kind of the fun of it. So then you left school and went into accounting for a little while,
mm-hmm.
and then. Well, I guess you were kind of still in accounting at Meadowbrook, too.
Yeah, so I did a lot of the books at the preschool as well.
Yeah.
I was teaching classes there, but also got very involved in the business
back
side of things.
Part of it,
Yep. And then I was doing accounts receivable. That was kind of my first, like, I guess, real job that wasn't a family business type of thing. And I was there for about a year, year and a half. And then I moved over to Staples Corporate.
Yes.
Where I got really into the accounting there. Mm. So I started as an accountant 1 and then got promoted to accountant 2. And then I was a senior accountant and then a supervisor of accounting. So I loved my time at Staples. I loved my group. The only reason I left was because we opened our business. So,
and like, talk to me about the genesis then of opening the business. What's going on in, I don't know, 2015, 16, 17, where you're like, I need to do this.
My husband, JP, and I, we were homebrewing and we were just like loving visiting breweries. We're like, this atmosphere is just like, we just love it. It just feels like something that we would want to get into.
Mm.
And so we were very much, we had started actually our business plan in 2012. So it probably started even before.
Oh, very cool.
Before then. But we kind of started it and put it down and never really finished it. And then it was 2017. We're actually in Jamaica on vacation. And we were just out by the pool. We met some people. And we were chatting with them, and they were like, well, what do you do for work? So we told them, and we're like, but, you know, we'd really love to open a brewery someday. Like, that's kind of the ultimate goal. Like, will we ever do it? We don't know. And they just looked at us, and they're like, well, why don't you just do it? You're young. Like, why not? And we're like, huh, maybe we should think about that a little more.
No way. So some strangers.
It was, yeah, it was strangers. I couldn't even tell you their names.
Wow.
So yeah, we got back from that trip, and probably 6 months later, we're like, all right, let's finish this business plan. And at that time, I had started doing some like roasting at home too, so the coffee piece was starting to kind of come into it. And we were like, the coffee and beer, it just makes perfect sense together. So we finished that business plan. And then just, I think it was June 2017, started reaching out to people in the city, like, where could we put something like this? And we got connected with the MEDC. And it was kind of all, everything just kind of fell in line after that.
Very cool. And MEDC is Marlboro Economic Development Committee, for those who might not be local to the Boston area listening. Was the strategy around coffee and beer passion play, or also like, hey, we can go after two different markets, you know, morning coffee?
Yeah, it was very much, you know, we, our lease is our lease no matter what our hours are. We didn't really want to be the Thursday through Saturday, you know, brewery. We wanted to be a place where people could come every day, all day. So, the coffee piece of it was really important in kind of rounding out that business plan. We were able to open at 7 a.m. At 11, we start pouring beer. So we kind of hit that crowd that's here to work, but then maybe they've been here a few hours and now they're finishing work so they can have a beer. So, so yeah, kind of being a space for the community has always been like the number one reason why we opened the business. And just being open all day, every day. I mean, it was a lot more work than I think we anticipated. You know, there's no day when there's no one at the tap room. So it's like, even when we're not there, we might be getting a phone call or a question. But I don't think we'd have it any other way. Just for that coffee business, having that consistency that we're here every morning for you was really important to us.
Does one completely outshine the other in terms of revenue?
Revenue-wise, beer definitely does. You know, you're paying a little bit more for a beer. Yes. You're getting two or three of them.
Right.
But I will say that sales-wise, we are selling an equivalent amount of coffee drinks. So coffee drinks to beer drinks are very similar.
Wow, very cool.
Yep.
Very cool. And we're drinking a hard soda at the moment.
Drinking a hard soda, yeah.
Which is delicious.
This is a new experiment we were trying. So it's a hard seltzer base, and then it's got a bunch of lime soda in it, flavor in it. So it's electric green colored, which is kind of fun. It's our first shot at this, and we want to do a whole bunch of different flavors. We actually brought it to a beer festival a couple weeks ago, and everyone's walking around, where's the green one? Where can I find the green one? Because it is such a...
It's
a green.
It's like St. Patty's Day
it
green.
It is, and we released it right before St. Patty's Day.
Smart. The marketing.
Yep.
That's brilliant. So when you say you underestimated the hours, like, talk to me about that. What was the original vision, and then what was the reality?
I think, you know, the original vision was, you just don't know until you get into it. You know, it's just that when you open, I think not having any day to have a break was kind of the, like, oh shoot, that's what 7 days a week is.
Yes.
Especially being a new business owner. When we first opened our doors, opening day was Saturday, May 11th, 2019. And I remember not getting home till 2 a.m. and having to wake up the next morning to open the tap room at 6 a.m.
Wow.
And I just said after day one, I was like, I don't know how I'm going to do this every day.
Yeah.
Luckily, we hired some great people and said, no, we don't have to be there to open and close the tap room every day. But that initial kind of like reality check when we first did open, it made us realize real quick that we could not be there 24/7. It just wasn't going to be realistic to have a work-life balance of any type.
Mm-hmm.
And I was still working my full-time corporate job at the time also. So, so that was a challenging time, but I actually left my corporate job in February of 2020, right before the pandemic,
you did.
Which was interesting timing. So.
Wow. Okay. So you stuck it out for almost a year.
Yeah.
Doing both.
Yep. Yep. So I would wake up in the morning. I'd get to the tap room usually like 4 o'clock to roast coffee if it was a roasting day. So I'd roast the coffee. I'd help my bartender open up the tap room, and then I'd go off to my corporate job once my husband got into the tap room. And then when I got out of my job, I'd come back to the tap room and help on bar. And it was not sustainable.
Yes.
By any means. Yeah.
That is, so, and that's like almost a year doing that.
Almost a year. That's but a you know, schedule. The excitement of opening a business, I think, kind of was the adrenaline to kind of get through that.
Yes,
I think if we were at that point right now, 5 years in, I would not.
You'd be going nuts. Yeah. That's so interesting. And when you went to open it, like you said, you had the business plan kind of done in 2012 or the start of it is a better way of saying it. And then you formalized it. Like, I got to think that you had people around you that were incredibly supportive, and then some people around you that were like, are you sure you want to do this? Like, were there detractors that made you think a little harder about it as well?
Not really, to be honest.
Oh, cool.
We had a lot of support from our family, from our friends. And I think because we'd been home brewing and we'd been like roasting at home too, and we had the vision, and I think we were able to kind of like portray that to people, mm-hmm. and they got it. I think the only maybe words of caution we got were from people who are in the industry.
Really? Okay.
I can't think of anyone specifically, but I do remember that, like, you know, again, you don't know what you don't know until you're in it.
Yeah.
And it's just so much more work than you think it is, mm-hmm. When you're putting it down on paper, for sure.
And like now that you're in it, how do you balance, like, yes, we have to sell coffee, and yes, we have to sell beer or hard soda, but at the same time, you want to make it a place in the community,
mm-hmm.
which isn't necessarily, that's to Mark, not in your business. That seems more vague,
mm-hmm.
you know, and like less substantial. Like, how do you articulate that when you think about like a place for people to hang out and be in the community? And then I guess, like, how do you articulate that vision? And then how do you operationalize something
mm-hmm.
like that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think envisioning the space was kind of the first part. We had visited so many breweries. We kind of knew what we liked, what we didn't like, how we wanted our tap room to feel. Because the feel of the tap room is everything. When someone comes in, it's, you know, the lighting, the music, it's the vibe, totally. So we kind of knew what we wanted from that perspective. And then we really wanted to center, you know, we didn't go into this wanting to distribute our beer worldwide. You know, that wasn't our goal. Our goal was to kind of bring people into our space. So mm-hmm. we really started with that focus. I remember our business plan said, you know, we want to do live music, and we want to do yoga in the tap room, and we want to have paint nights and all those things. And those are things that we did introduce early on. And now we host, since the beginning, we've hosted a run club on Monday nights. We do trivia on Tuesdays. We have live music occasionally. But we like to do these big parties too. I mean, just yesterday was a solar eclipse. We had a little solar eclipse party.
Yep, exactly.
So it's just kind of thinking of those fun things that bring people together.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, we have coffee, we have beer, we have some food. So it gives you a reason to come.
Yes.
You know, out, and it gives you something to do while you're enjoying these events. But the events are really kind of the draw and what we like to focus on. We have some stuff planned for the summer, pending road work.
Right.
but that's really kind of our goal, is just to, it has been from the beginning, was what type of events can we put on that's going to draw people together here? Mm.
Do you, like, as a business, track new customers versus returning customers?
Yes. And it's actually impressive. I think because of our coffee business too, especially, we're close to like 70% returning
Whoa.
Customers, which is crazy.
Wow. And do you have any industry averages? Do you know of?
Not off the top of
yeah,
my head.
Yeah, no, me neither.
No.
I'm sorry.
But I think the coffee piece definitely increases that number, because people are coming to us Monday through Friday during their work week to get their coffee, you know?
Yes.
And that's actually part of the business that took a while to build up, was the coffee side. Because people are used to their morning routines.
You're competing a lot too, yeah.
Yeah. And when we did open, we had, you know, Starbucks right around the corner from mm-hmm. us. They've moved down the street a little bit since then, but But once someone's in a routine, it's hard to break that. So we kind of knew that going into it. But we did end up really developing this nice regulars crowd that comes every morning to get their coffee. So it took time to build to that. But yeah, I think that's probably one of the big reasons for that higher returning customer rate.
And do you feel like when you're in that coffee business and now, I mean, I'll admit I'm one of those people who makes coffee at home. Mm-hmm. Like just to avoid having to, I like to grind my beans and do that. I'm not at roasting yet.
Yeah.
but do you feel like competing in that business space where, you know, so many people are ordering on an app? Mm-hmm. Is that like, has that been a challenge, like from a terms of speed? Because the morning is all, I mean, the morning rush is a real thing.
Yeah.
Has that been a challenge in terms of?
You know, we have online ordering set up. It's just through our website. We don't have like an app you know, we're not doing delivery service. It's kind of hard to, you know, get your coffee 100%. Delivered and have it be 100%. Fresh and hot. Mm-hmm. But we found that we don't do a ton of online ordering. We get maybe 10 a day, 10 in the morning. But most people are just walking in.
Yeah. And they're willing to kill that 3 or 4 minutes anyway.
And sometimes they want to kill some time before they've got to be where they need to be. Or maybe they're on a lunch break and they're just, again, killing time. But we found that if people want to, you know, have it ready to go, they're going to place their order online. But most of our customers will just come in and order at the register.
Well, and the vibe of your store is one where, like, you want, when you show up, you want to stay there.
Yeah.
And, like, nothing against Starbucks, but when you, the vibe of that place is, like, get out of here.
Yeah.
You
know, it's just a like, different environment.
Right.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, whereas when I do order, like, I live 20 minutes south of here. When I do order, like, a coffee from a, like, local spot, I don't mind going in and waiting for a couple minutes. So I was just interested to know if that was, like, a challenge, but it kind of meets the vibe you were going for anyway.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And, you know, one thing we don't have a ton of, but we're working on is adding some food options, especially on the breakfast side.
Okay, yeah.
And we've been getting these burritos that actually come from Colorado. They're handmade in Colorado. They are delicious. But we've kind of been looking at, you know, they cost us a lot. Like everything since COVID, it's gone up tremendously. Mm-hmm. Cost of everything has been up. So we're trying to bring stuff in house now. So this week we're actually rolling out our egg sandwiches for the first time. So we'll be doing bacon, egg and cheese on bagels.
Love that.
So we're just kind of looking at things that we can execute quicker too. So burritos were taking us a long time to heat up. They were taking about 7.5 minutes, which is way too long when you are in a rush and you need to get something to eat quick. So, the breakfast sandwiches take 2 minutes, much quicker. So we're thinking of things like that too.
Mm. So you launched your business in spring of 2019. A year later, we're shut down.
Yes.
How did you manage through that?
You know, being open for only 9 months had its advantages for sure, because we were not set in our ways. Things had been getting busier for us, and we were so short-staffed at that point. And it almost, like, just gave us a minute to kind of, like, take a step back, reevaluate. But we have, even after 9 months, we had amazing customers. I mean, they were still coming every morning to get coffee. We're doing grab and go. We never shut down during COVID. We stayed open. People were ordering cases of beer to take home and being so generous with tipping our team. It was really amazing to see that. But we also had to get creative because we had a ton of beer on draft and we couldn't sell any of that. So we got a ton of mason jars. We were just getting 32 ounce mason jars, and you could pre-order the night before, and we would fill up your mason jar with anything on draft and wrap it up in a little paper baggie, and it was ready for pickup the next morning.
Wow.
And we still get questions to this day if we're ever going to bring that back.
Right,
and the answer is no, because that is was a lot of work to do. And we have cans of beer available in the tap room, but for the time and for moving draft, it worked. There were days we had 60 mason jars that we were filling.
Wow.
So it helped us out for sure.
Was there ever a moment through that time or through any of this where you were like, I'm not sure we're going to make it?
Surprisingly, no.
Good.
I think
that's
because
we
were so new still, we didn't have a normal year to even compare sales to.
Right.
And I think we just had that fresh perspective and we were like, we're going to pivot. We're going to do whatever we need to. You know, that's the reason why we do have our online store. We hadn't had online ordering pre-COVID. Mm. And then as soon as it happened, within a day, we had it set up and ready to go. So it was kind of the push we needed to get that set up as well.
Very cool. Yeah. Like when you think about, we were joking in the beginning about who knows what the next 10 years brings. Mm-hmm. Like what changes do you think you're going to have to make coming up, or do you want to make coming up to continually execute on your vision?
Yeah, I think food is a huge component now. Mm. When we initially were opening, the brewery model was very much you could exist and not have a kitchen, and that was enough. And things, especially since COVID, have changed dramatically in that realm.
Okay.
People want food. You go to a brewery, you want at least an option to get something. Mm-hmm. Whether it's from a food truck or in-house, I think people do like the convenience of just being able to order at the brewery. So that's something we're definitely reevaluating. We don't have a full kitchen and we don't have room for a full kitchen in our space. But we do have a Turbo Chef oven and we can get creative with that. So that is definitely one of the things that we are looking to expand upon, is kind of our in-house food offerings.
Food options, yeah. Also, I'm guessing people stay longer.
Yeah, absolutely.
When there's
food, right?
Yep.
Yeah, yep. Go back we up we or... started out with pretzels and Belgian waffles. Those were kind of the only two things we had, and it was great. And now we've got pizzas and the egg sandwiches and things like that. So we're just looking to expand that a little.
Yeah.
Make it a little more heartier of a menu.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, what is the deal we were talking before we jumped on about running marathons? What's the deal with runners and their love of beer?
And beer? I don't know. I think you work so hard and you run and you gotta hydrate with.
Yeah, there's a guy here who's an
Ironman
athlete and obsessed with beer.
Yeah.
Obsessed with beer. And now that I'm foraying into this world, mm-hmm. I won't say I'm an official marathoner, but it's wild. Everyone's talking about drinking beer and they're into all the...
Nothing tastes better than a cold beer after a long run.
After a long
run. It's so true. Yes.
And you've incorporated it with your run club on Monday nights.
Yes. Yep. So we've got run club on Monday nights. You know, pre-COVID, our run club got up to 80, 90 people.
Whoa.
It got to a point where we're like, we might need, like, it's like a 5K at that point.
Yeah.
Like, we might need a police detail or something. And then the winter came and COVID happened. So we still, on a really good day, we'll get 40, 50 runners to come out, which is amazing.
That's
a
lot.
And we do host 2 5Ks a year also. We've got our anniversary one coming up in May.
Oh, cool.
And then we do a turkey trot for Tots in November.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Do you, as someone who... Melinda probably wouldn't just share this with you, but has run all the major marathons.
Yes.
And many others. But do you feel like that personal experience has a direct impact on your professional life nowadays? Because, like, I don't think you were lying to me, but when I said, like, was there ever a time when there was doubt? Like the perseverance couldn't have come through more
mm-hmm.
in like the tone of your voice of
yeah.
just being like, no, we were just always going to do it.
Yeah.
I don't care.
I mean, it's kind of
the vibe I got from you.
Yeah. I think when you're running, you have to be in such a mental headspace to run 26.2 miles. You know,
yes.
You can't just, if you're mentally not in it, it's horrible.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely horrible. And through the training, it's tough. You've got to kind of put your head in the right space for that. So I think that training definitely has helped us in our business too, just to kind of like keep pushing and not give up and kind of get fresh perspectives and keep our minds kind of clear. But yeah, I definitely think it has impacted how we run our business for sure.
When you're not in a good mental health space, whether it be running or at work, when
mm-hmm.
you're overwhelmed, like how do you snap back, or do you have a mechanism?
I think this is a constant challenge because there can be days that are so overwhelming.
Mm.
But it for me, it goes back to working out and meditation,
okay.
You know, just yoga, meditation, running, any activity like that. There's been stretches of time where we're just so busy and it just feels like we're at the tap room so early and we're there so late and we get home and you're too tired to make dinner. So then you're not eating healthy and you just don't, you kind of get unravels. In this rut. Yeah. It's horrible. And I hate when we get to that point. And so it's always, I think I've really, especially in the past year, I've realized how important it is that I need to just, like, if something doesn't get done, it's good. We can do it later, you know? And just even in the past month, I was like, I'm going to try really hard to limit my days to 8 hours. Mm. I was like, because I notice when I approach that 12, 14 hour day, I'm just like a zombie when I get home and you go to bed and your head's not clear and it definitely affects you. So that, I think limiting hours is mm-hmm. one of my goals. Mm-hmm. and just making sure that, you know, we're able to take the time to cook meals and to exercise and do those things and prioritize is so important. Because I definitely notice it when I'm in that headspace and I take the time to do those things that I feel a million times better. And my head's clear to operate at the tap room too after that.
Prioritize yourself.
Yeah, for sure. Kind
of thing. Yeah. I've been a big believer in when I'm taking care of my house, my work life's better. And by house, I mean like keeping my house in order, relationships, health, et cetera. Yep. So that really resonates. Have you changed the way in which you go about things? Do you now, like, you reference too tired to cook dinner and mm-hmm. work out? Are you like a morning person?
I'm 1,000% a morning person. Yes. Okay. I like to get up, work out first thing. If I have to do it after work, it's probably not going to happen.
Yeah, same. Never happens for me.
Yeah, yeah.
So what time are you waking up if you have to, like, roast coffee and stuff?
So now, I mean...
You've helped.
The time... Yes, we have help now. So we have a roaster who's doing that now. So typically, I get up between 5 and 6, depending on the day. If I have to be at the tap room for opening, I have to be there around 6 a.m.
Okay.
So if I want to work out before that, it's usually 4:30 that I'm having to be up by. But if I don't,
working out, running for you,
it could be running. We have a Peloton too, which has been a game changer for us.
Especially in the winter.
Yeah. So even just doing a bike ride, there's a ton of strength classes and mm-hmm. yoga and meditation. So either running or doing something on the Peloton, and then making lunches.
Yes.
If I hadn't done it the night before, cause I was too tired.
Yes. Yes.
But yeah, I'm usually in the tap room by like 8-ish.
Okay.
8 is usually my target if I don't have to be there for open.
Yes. So you're getting all the important prioritization down in the morning. That makes sense.
Yep.
What, like, you got me peaked. I think I probably have a better knowledge of how beer is made, but like, in terms of roasting coffee, I feel like that's a rabbit hole of how'd you get into that? What have you like learned and how does your style come through now?
I will say coffee roasting is a science.
Yeah.
And it's amazing because so many people take the process for granted. Mm. It's like you wake up, either go to the coffee shop, make it in your house, and that's it. You don't really put much more thought into where those beans came from other than that. And I think the most eye-opening thing I learned was these coffee farmers and kind of their day-to-day and what that looks like. And this is very back-breaking work. I mean, they are out there harvesting coffee cherries, usually by hand, on these steep hills. You know, the price that some of these coffee farmers are getting is not livable for them. So one of our goals has really been to try to partner, do some more direct trade relationships so that we know that the farmers are getting fair wages, that we're paying a price that allows them to offer that. But then, I mean, once it gets to the U.S., then it gets delivered to us and we go through the roasting process. We do evaluate all our green coffee. So we'll get samples of coffee in. We'll cup them. It's what we call it when we're sampling coffees. We cupped 4 new coffees this morning to see what we wanted to purchase. And then once we find a coffee that we like, we purchase that coffee, we get it in, we start to tweak the roast profiles on it. Coffee is really interesting when it roasts. So it starts out green. So coffee is a little seed from a coffee cherry. And when we get the green little coffee seeds, green beans, They've been dried out, so the moisture is a lower level, because if it wasn't, it would grow bacteria, right. Get moldy. So we get those coffees. We have to evaluate them for moisture, density, so that we know how to roast it. And then during the roasting process, there's, again, a lot of science that goes on there. So your green coffee starts to acclimate to the warmer roasting temperature, and then it starts to go through a Maillard reaction. So it starts to, the sugars in it start to caramelize, and eventually the coffee starts cracking. Well, it's called first crack. So it starts cracking. The beans are kind of expanding. At that point, they're getting a lot darker too. And then if we push it a little further, we might hit a second crack, which we're kind of in like dark roast territory at that point. But yeah, it's really interesting. Just the heat application, the air application, during the roasting process can significantly impact the roast itself. So there's a lot of science behind it. I did, you know, I was home roasting for a while, and then before we opened the tap room, I went up to Waterbury. They have the International School of Coffee up there. Mm-hmm. And so I took a week-long roasting class and kind of got to roast on bigger machines than my little home roaster that I was using. We actually, when we hired our roaster now, we sent him up there to do the same class. Cool. But I learned so much then, and just got a little more confidence to actually operate a roaster that's not just a little
commercial
1 pound. So yeah, that's kind of like how I guess that's got into roasting and got a little bit more education on it to be able to do it at the level we're doing now.
And is coffee that you like, if you're out on vacation and you have to get a coffee, is it just ruined for you at this point?
I know, because we will always Google and find the places that we know we're gonna love.
That's awesome.
And I can still drink just a regular cup of coffee. Yeah. Like, you know, sometimes you just need caffeine and it does its job.
It's it, right? And the lighter the roast, right, for higher caffeine?
So there's a lot of, it really depends on the size of the coffee and if you're weighing. During roasting, you're not really burning off a ton of the caffeine content unless you go super dark on it. Then you're kind of roasting off literally anything that was in that coffee bean. But it doesn't significantly reduce the caffeine content during the roast. But what you do get as you roast it longer is your beans are going to get lighter because they're losing moisture and they're expanding a little. So you think you have a lighter coffee. If you're always weighing your coffee, you're going to need more coffee beans for that. And if they have the same caffeine content, you're going to have, it's all pretty similar.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That's really, it makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
There are, Arabica beans are typically what a lot of people are serving these days, but the Robusta beans, have a higher caffeine content. So, if you find a coffee that's a Robusta blend, that's going to have more caffeine content. Okay. But those coffees tend to be a little more bitter. They're not as sweet as Arabica beans. Yeah, so they're a little more kind of harsh and intense of a flavor. We've never sold a Robusta bean, though they are starting to do some like Robusta specialty coffees. Everything we sell is a specialty coffee grade, and it's Arabica. And I think up until recently, Robusta hasn't really entered that specialty realm, but people are starting to kind of play with it. So Robusta, I'm totally like getting a little geeky now.
I'm like thinking of myself like and you sell roasted beans?
Yeah.
I gotta swing by.
You do.
I mean, you're next to me here.
Yeah.
Man, I don't know what kind of coffee I drink.
Yeah.
I drink Pete's Major Dickinson.
Yeah, most is Arabica. Yeah. Some of the lower price stuff that you kind of get at the grocery store may be Robusta or Robusta blend because you're getting more caffeine. It's an easier coffee to grow as well. It's more resistant to disease.
Yes.
So a lot easier to grow. They don't have to really worry about the plant's hardiness. You know, it kind of just will grow. Whereas Arabica is a little bit more delicate of a bean to produce.
Mm. I honestly, you are getting nerdy, but I love it. Like it's... you walk by a brewery and roast coffee roasting shop, and you're like, you just kind of take it for granted, and then like you talk to someone like yourself, and you're like,
there's a lot that goes into it.
There is a lot involved. So yeah. You can tell your passion for curiosity. Yeah. And
well, we always say there's so many ways to mess up a coffee from when it's from where it's grown until we serve it. You know, something could happen at the farm and the beans just aren't up to expectation or up to the quality. And then once it gets here, we may not roast it properly, so it can get messed up there. And then once, even if we do everything perfectly, we put it on the coffee bar. If we don't dial in our espresso grinders or something, we're not pulling the shot properly. There's just so many avenues where things can fall apart in the chain. So we really try to focus on all those parts and making sure we're getting good quality green coffee, that we're learning and roasting and tweaking the coffee profiles every time we roast it. And that our bar team is trained on dialing in and knowing when to recognize something that needs to be adjusted.
Yeah. Like, if you had difficulty as you've grown, like, you've clearly got awesome attention to detail, right? Yes. Like, has that been hard to replicate through the team?
I will say when we first opened, we had no training program in place. Right. We were figuring it out. Here we go. Let's all just make a coffee. And in the past 2 years, we've really kind of created a training program that has allowed us to make sure we're training those things, make sure we're training on how to dial in, how to recognize when an espresso shot needs to be dumped or remade. Just knowing what's out of the ordinary so that they can bring it to someone's attention if something just seems off. So we have started to implement that in our training program, which has been great. So there's always, I think the maintenance of the training is probably the more ongoing thing.
Yeah.
But our team picks these things up and they ask questions and they want to, you know how to make these things better. So for the most part, I'd say the team has been awesome with that.
Has it changed the way you hire?
Definitely. When we first opened, we strictly hired on personality.
Yes.
Which is definitely a huge important quality. Yeah.
Especially when you interact with customers.
Yeah, exactly. So we hired, I don't think a single one of our bartenders had coffee or beer experience coming in. We were just, maybe one or two had worked at a bar.
Yeah.
But no one had beer or coffee experience. So we all kind of were just in the same boat. We're like, okay, we're opening this business and here we go. And now we definitely, if we need to hire someone for more focus on the coffee side, like, we know what to look for now a little bit more so. And same with the beer, if we're looking for someone more beer focused. I think now, having been established for 5 years, we do get applicants that do have that background experience too. Whereas, taking a shot on a brand new brewery opening up, you just don't know how that's going to go, right?
Right.
So I thank our entire team who started with us for sure for kind of sticking it out with us, and especially through the pandemic too.
Yeah, it's incredible. Congrats.
Thanks.
It's really cool. You're in a competitive marketplace, but also like in a competitive area of downtown. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of options.
Yeah.
I'm sure your rent isn't cheap. Like, yes. It's just like, you've got some classic... as a layman, not part of your industry, there's some classic obstacles that look like they're difficult. So kudos to you and JP for pulling it off. It's really impressive.
Thanks.
It's really impressive. And now I need to make sure I buy my coffee there.
Yes.
Yes. And definitely. Do you sell in 5 pound bags?
Not yet.
That's the hardest thing to do. Is find 5 pound bags.
Most of our bags are 12 ounces. Cool. We do have a coffee subscription. It's like an online subscription, so it auto renews. But there's a 2 pound option in there.
Hey, two's better.
I'm in. But we have not released any 5 pound options.
I'm just kidding. But there's like very few.
I know.
Few. It's just, as a person who makes their coffee at home, it's like, man, I just want to buy a ton of this.
I know.
But then it's the freshness thing.
Exactly. Yep.
So it's a balancing act. I must get selfish for a second as I'm a week away from running the marathon.
Yeah.
You got any tips for a newbie?
Ooh, I think just enjoy it.
Okay.
It's like the energy at Boston is like so amazing.
I am very excited.
Yeah.
I will say now like that the long miles are behind me.
Yep.
It's like less fear and now just more excitement.
But yep. Just enjoy every moment and just look forward to that beer at the end of the race.
I know. Exactly. I know. I might have to take one of these.
Yeah.
Linda, thanks for coming on.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
If anyone's looking for a spot to hang out in Marlboro,
come see us.
Come check out La Shoe. Been there. It's phenomenal. and try the hard soda.
Yeah.
It's awesome. It was fun. It was fun to sip on and enjoy during the podcast. So
yeah, and there should be more flavors coming out in the near future.
Love it. Well, hey, thank you so much, and I'm sure we'll see you around town.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Take care.